My next guest is a Super Bowl champion and one of the greatest NFL coaches of all time. Ladies and gentlemen, recurring guest, Mr. Dick Vermeil. Coach, is everything going for you?
Everything's going fine, thank you. Yeah, I don't have any problems. I haven't lost a game in a long time.
So what have you been up to? There's no football until September. What have you been doing to kill time?
Well, I fool around with our wine, Vermeil wine business quite a bit, you know, and things are going pretty good out there, though the smoke from the fire destroyed our red grapes this year. So that's a problem. But right now it's going well, and I enjoy that business. And I stay in touch with a few of the football people to sort of try to stay up. But I think I fall a little more behind every year.
I wanted to get your opinion on this whole situation with Aaron Rodgers. And if you've ever seen anything like it?
No, you know, I have such great admiration and respect for how he plays the game. You know, Aaron is just, you don't need my accolades, you know, but I'm disappointed in that he is such a figure within that community. And unlike other NFL teams, there's not one owner. That community really, in many small ways and contributions, owns that football team. And they live and die with each person, especially the superstar. And for him now to want out of there, he's not only leaving, or the possibility of leaving, a football team, leaving a community, you know, and that disturbs me and disappoints me. He has his reasons, and hopefully it'll end up, won't get a divorce. Okay. Let's hope, because he, you know, no question he's a great player, and he is the figurehead of that football team. And I think that holds some responsibility to the community as well.
When you were with all different organizations you were a part of, how important to you guys was it to make sure the quarterback was 100% happy all the time?
Well, it wasn't as big a problem in the old days. You know, most of the quarterbacks I coached were just happy to be there. You know, Ron Jaworski was really happy to be there. We traded Charlie Young, a tight end, with the Los Angeles Rams, and brought him back to be our quarterback. And, you know, he was from Youngstown, Ohio, and an East Coast kid, and I thought he'd fit really good in Philadelphia, and he has in his career after the game. So, you know, I think he was excited to be there. Needless to say, Kurt Warner, he was so grateful, you know, he would have probably paid us to play, you know. So that's a different than we traded and brought Trent Green with us to the Kansas City Chiefs, and he was much of the same framework, just appreciative and grateful for his opportunity. And we gave up a high draft choice to get him to come with us, and he did, and he excelled. He did a great job. He lives in the community. He broadcasts their preseason games, you know, and knows, you see him on CBS. But those guys are a different mindset. They didn't come up as superheroes and projected to be Hall of Famers and those kinds of things. And I think they're probably a little more humble, maybe quite a bit more humble, maybe quite a bit more appreciative, and maybe a hell of a lot more grateful for their opportunity.
Do you think just how big the game has gotten is playing into it? Do you think guys nowadays don't really care about spending their whole career with one franchise?
You know, I really don't know. You know, and Sunday is still a football game. They still play football, you know, and it's a wide open game today, much more so. It's not quite as physical a game as it used to be, but it's still a great game. And the TV ratings prove that, and the excitement that the games draw each weekend, not only on local television, but national television. So It is really a great, great, great game. And it keeps growing. The money keeps getting greater. I think probably the more the money gets involved, especially with players, the more it influences how important they really think they are. You know, sometimes there's, I think, a distortion can occur when you become maybe a little bit arrogant, and you really forget what you are. You're a football player, you know.
Yeah. So I want to get your thoughts on it. Obviously, the Chiefs season didn't end as planned. Wasn't exactly the most competitive game against Tampa. What were your thoughts on the game, and then how do you like the moves they've made since then?
Well, you know, I felt they went into the game injured in the offensive line, and that's going to have a very negative effect on the quarterback. I thought they still might be able to win it. I didn't anticipate Tampa Bay and Brady to be able to play quite as well as he did, but you know what happens when a guy like him gets in the big one. But I think they've solved those problems. They've made many moves in the offensive line. But, you know, it's hard to hide those guys, you know, and defense, especially good defensive fronts, locate who they are. And you can't double everybody. And the pressure it puts on quarterbacks, regardless of how mobile you are and all those kinds of things, you can't be what you really are when you're given time to be it. And Carson Wentz is the great example of that. His whole downfall, in my opinion, was the offensive line injuries. And I've never seen an offensive line get hurt as often as and as permanent as this line was destroyed. And it really negatively influenced his career, and it would anybody's.
How do you see the Eagles doing this year? Obviously, with Carson Wentz now being in Indy, now they've got Jalen Hurts. What do you think of him, and how do you think they're going to do?
I think they'll be obviously a lot better than last year, but I think they'll be surprisingly good. You get an all-pro right tackle back healthy. You get an all-pro right guard back healthy. You get either a first-round pick from 2 years ago back healthy to play left tackle, or the big, strong Australian that came on as a non-football player, and it looks like he's going to be.
I think he was a rugby guy.
Yeah, rugby guy. You get him back. You got the left guard back. You got an all-pro center back. Why not have a good football team? Unless they go through the same injury problem, I think they'll be very good. You know, they have skill. Now they have two first-round pick wide receivers. They have one quality tight end locked in, and, of course, the other quality tight end may or may not be here. I hope he is. But I think they'll be an excellent football team. My concern is their secondary. Will that be good enough against the best? I don't know, but I bet they'll win 10 games, maybe more.
Interesting. Do you think DeVonta Smith, the receiver they grabbed in the first round, Heisman Trophy winner, needs to put on a little bit of muscle, or do you think he can do it as is?
Well, I think he'll mature and he'll put on a few pounds, but I mean, he's a player. You know, the whole idea of being a great wide receiver is be away from the defenders. Don't be where they can hit you hard, you know. And I think he'll catch the ball with more space around him more often than most wide receivers, because he's elusive. He's a gifted player. You watch him play, he is gifted because he is lighter. Is he more susceptible to injury? Probably, but you still got to hit him, you know. So I think he's going to be an exciting player and a real great contribution to the Eagles.
What did you think of the hiring of Nick Sirianni?
You know, I was disappointed they let Doug Peterson go. I thought he deserved another chance, because I bought into the fact that if I lost all my offensive linemen, my quarterback wouldn't play well. We're going to lose ball games. I've been there. I know where that happens. So I was disappointed. I don't know all the story, but I thought he deserved another year. And they parted ways, and now they got a new coach. I wish him luck. You know, I've never met him. He's got a lot of fire, enthusiasm, and enthusiasm is sort of the engine that creates passion, you know. And sometimes that's infectious, as long as it's directed properly. And I give him credit for being ready to go. Yeah.
Do a lot of the current coaches of some of the teams that you were with reach out to you about kind of pick your brain about how you had success in those locations?
I didn't hear the last part of
your question. Oh, I was going to say, just like for example, for the Eagles, I assume Nick Sirianni hasn't reached out to you just to kind of.
No, I haven't met him. I haven't talked to him. No.
Interesting. And then I want to get your opinion on the Rams. Obviously, got a brand new quarterback in Matt Stafford. Jared Goff is now in Detroit. What do you think Stafford can do that maybe Goff struggled with?
I think he'll add a consistency in high quality performances. You know, he never really has been surrounded by a good football team. And I think they will do that for him at the Rams. I was not down. I've seen Goff play outstanding, and I've seen him play. I can't understand if it's the same guy. But I think Matthew Stafford will shine out there. I really do. You know, he's in the right place. They certainly know how to coach quarterbacks out there. And with his experience and overall talent, and you just look at his past performances on mediocre teams. You know, I think he'll be a real factor in making them a very competitive football team.
What do you think sets Sean McVay apart from other coaches?
I think he's humble. He's willing to learn. He's willing to say, I don't know everything I don't know, and I'm going to learn. He'll ask questions. He'll take advice. He surrounds himself with good people. He had a great background. He learned from the best initially in his career. He brought to the Rams a scheme and a confidence in his ability to teach that scheme. And he's now added to the scheme through experience. He's, you know, added coaches. He's lost good players. He's brought in good players. They're very willing to give up high picks to get somebody more ready to play, a la George Allen, you know, Los Angeles Rams. So, you know, I like him a lot. I really do. I like him a lot.
What did you think of all the quarterbacks that went in the first round last month?
Well, you know, I'm not an authority on those. Of course, number one guy, he's not a gamble. You know, most of the quarterbacks are drafted, or not most, but about 50% of them don't really meet expectations. Number one, they usually go to losing teams, and they can't build the rest of the team fast enough to allow this guy to develop confidence and perform well. But Trevor will certainly be, I think, a superstar in this league. The other guys, I don't know that much about them. You know, I didn't see them as much. I don't see that much of, you know, the Oregon quarterback here in the East and those kind of things. And BYU, I don't see him out here playing that much. So I'm not knowledgeable enough to make an intelligent evaluation.
And I know you told me last time you always love giving guys a chance. And obviously you got Vince Papale a shot. You gave Kurt Warner a shot. You gave Dante Hall a shot. Do you think the NFL should kind of expand the pool of training camps and maybe get more guys in there that maybe otherwise wouldn't be out there?
Well, you know, there's absolutely no correlation to being working less and getting better. It doesn't exist in my knowledge, in my experience. And, you know, they're cutting out OTAs other than virtual. They're cutting out, the Eagles gave up their mini camp. Their 3-day mandatory mini camp. They gave that up. So I don't like that. That doesn't mean I'm right. I believe in teaching. I believe in coaching. I believe in development of players and the way they're going with the rosters and the schedule and the preseason. It makes it very difficult on coaching. There's coaching staffs between 22 and 25 people on the staff. And they don't have it, and you're paying them fortune to do nothing, you know, really. And now they teach them to run the scheme, you know, and I don't know how much time they are given to develop the players they're paying a lot of money to.
Are there any guys that are kind of maybe on the outside of becoming a head coach that you're excited to see what they do when they get to the next level?
No, I don't have that background right anymore. No, I can't see that.
Yeah. And I wanted to ask you, so one of your guys, Harold Carmichael's getting into Canton this year. Did you, was he there before you got there?
Yeah. I had him 7 years.
How'd you find him?
Oh, outstanding. Just outstanding, you know, and we were a run first, pass second. Even at that, I think he caught 79 balls 1 year. I think he averaged 16 point something yards of reception. You know, not many guys do that, especially in those days. But, you know, he's a great football player. Took a long time to get him in there. If he'd been playing today on today's rules, because he wasn't really quick off the ball. But once he got downfield and started running and lengthened out that stride, he could fly. And you didn't know how fast he was until you got next to him when you were 8-9 yards deep. Now he's really flying, and he could run by you. And there wasn't anything he couldn't catch. Yeah. So, you know, he's a Hall of Fame player. He's a Hall of Fame person. He's a good friend, and I'm really excited for him.
So he, Kirby, if I'm wrong, they originally had him at tight end and then moved him to receiver.
No. He was always a wide receiver.
Oh, he was.
I used to tease him. If he got over 230 pounds, I'd move him to tight end. So he never had trouble meeting his playing weight.
Speaking of tight ends, Tim Tebow has been on a hiatus from the NFL for quite some time. Is now trying to make it a tight end. Do you think a guy who's been out of the league that long still has a chance? Or what do you think of that?
Well, he's going with his old coach. So that gives him a better chance than most guys would get. But the odds are probably not really good that he'll make it.
Interesting. And then are there any guys from the draft or maybe late round guys you saw that you're excited to see what they do at the next level? Maybe guys you've been watching in college ball?
No, I don't know the draft well enough. I saw a lot of college football this year and I enjoy it, but I don't, you know, I watch the game as a fan with a experience in coaching and I like to see the schemes and the different things you see in college football, but I don't get into the evaluation of players and watch them enough to form an opinion.
Yeah. And I want to ask you, have you gotten a chance to go out to SoFi Stadium yet or not yet?
No, I have not been there. No.
Yeah. Because that's all I think it's 100% attendance they're aiming for. So it's going to be apparently it's phenomenal.
Yeah. That's going to be exciting. Stan Kroenke mentioned I should come out. So I might do that this year sometime.
Absolutely. And then I want to ask you about your wine. Can you talk about that a little bit and how can I promote that a little bit so people can check it out?
Oh, yeah. You know, just Google Vermeil Wines. You know, it was a hobby for a long time. Growing up in the Napa Valley like I did in Calistoga, the north end of the valley, and growing up in a family where your grandfather made your wines and your friends were all in winemaking and vineyards and that kind of stuff. I started making wine as a hobby, about 150 to 200 cases a year with a little winery called On the Edge Winery, Paul Smith and Mary Sue Frediani, Frediani Vineyards, which I grew up in. My great-grandfather owned a portion of it years and years ago. So I've been involved with a vineyard all my life. And we made, you know, a limited number of bottles of Cabernet from 1999 all the way to 2007. And in 2008, some good friends with a lot of money that don't mind losing some said, let's turn your hobby and process and people into a wine business. So we did. Now we're making award-winning Cabernets, and we make a little Sauvignon Blanc, a little Chardonnay, a little Zinfandel. It's a great vineyard. We have our leading wine consultant is Thomas Brown. I call him the Bill Belichick of the Napa Valley. He's a winner, you know, and Andy Jones is On Hands winemaker. They do a great job for us. Our wines get anywhere from 90 to 96 grades annually. Our 18s have all got 94s and 95s, so I'm very pleased with that. We don't have a lot of it. It's not inexpensive, but it's high quality, good drinking wine. And we have about 350 wine club members now that get three shipments a year based on what they order. And the wine world now, we're just starting to go back to putting on virtual wine tastings and at wine dinner, wine events to sell wine and to, you know, create a bigger wine club. We have a tasting room in Napa, 1018 First Street. It's now open 7 days a week. It wasn't open all year last year. And we still did well. So that's a credit to the Andrew Curry and Kayla Jordan who run the tasting room out there for us. So, yeah, just Google Vermeil Wines. Yeah.
I think there's a lot of former and current NFL guys that are really getting into wine. I know.
Yeah, there's some very big high-end basketball players with millions of dollars go. That's not our organization. We don't make much, but we make it very good.
That's awesome. That's awesome. Well, that's really all the questions really have for you. Do appreciate you taking the time to chat for a few minutes. Always a pleasure.
All right. Thank you. Thank you for your interest. Take care.
Absolutely. Cool.
Oh yeah, yo, that's crazy. That's so funny because yeah. I think it was like, I don't know, a day or two ago, whatever. And yeah, it was like, this means being recorded. Like, what? Yeah. Okay.
I think Shannon just called Julio, but Zoom's like, all right, we're covering the bases here.
Right.
It was wild. I thought it was like, maybe it's depending on somebody's preferences, but it's been I've never heard it until this week. And then that happens. And then every Zoom call I've been on, that thing pops on. That's unreal.
Yeah, that's absurd,
yeah,
man.
Yeah, I'm sure Shannon's going to be like, all right, they got to do Zoom next time.
Right.
Yeah, that's just wild. My next guest is an anchor for SNY in New York. I want to welcome on recurring guest Chris Williamson. Chris, how's everything going for you?
Hey, it's going great, man. You know, the Knicks have just tied up the series. You know, the Nets are looking, you know, like they're gaining, you know, their prime form slowly but surely against the Celtics. And, you know, we got good things on the horizon for the Jets and, you know, the Islanders, you know, with hockey. So I can't complain.
What was going on with with Knicks Twitter last night in the first half? People are like, oh, it's same old Knicks. Randall isn't showing out. Got the MVP. Doesn't care anymore. In the second half, they're like completely 180. All right, he's back. We're good. Let's do it. And then everybody's happy.
Well, yeah. I mean, that's the thing about Knicks Twitter. You know, it's so volatile. It's one extreme or the other, right? You're not usually going to get a measured take from the rabid, you know, New York fans or Knicks fans. There are people in there, you know, who do have nuanced takes, but for the most part, they're going to overreact, you know. But the crazy thing was that they were still relatively, you know,
within striking. It was like an 8-point game, and they're like, yeah, the series is over. The whole thing's done. I'm like, you're up 1-0, 8-point game, cool it. We're good. So,
Yeah, they were down. Yeah, well, they were down one, but
like
eight-point
game. It's unbelievable. And then the Knicks were celebrating like we had just defeated Germany after getting one playoff win. But what was that?
Well, because look, man, they haven't been able to celebrate a victory since 2013.
I know they beat Boston. I remember the series. It wasn't close.
So you have to understand that because nobody, I think, on a serious note, the reason why you're seeing this type of celebration and reaction from Knicks fans is because nobody except for the 12 to 15 men on that Knicks roster believe that they could get this job done, that they would even be in the playoffs, let alone a four seed and have home court advantage. So look, I'm going to let them enjoy it, you know, because obviously they're not going to win a title or anything, but they are acting so rambunctious and wild. It's wonderful to see, though.
Are you surprised Kevin Knox and Neil Akina are not getting any time?
Nah, if you have watched the way the Knicks have played this year, all year long, you would understand why Kevin Knox is not getting the game, because he doesn't add anything to the team at this current point in time. Like, he started off the season all right, you know, hitting a quarter three, but that was it. And, you know, Tibbs is a very smart coach. Obviously, he's you got a championship on his belt with the Celtics and, you know, the 90s Knicks and all that. But, yeah, Frank, though, I am surprised by, especially because he's supposed to be, you know, a defensive menace. And what better player to bring in to guard Trae Young because of his length, because of his quickness. Now, Trae's going to get his buckets regardless. But as we've seen, nobody can really guard Trae Young. It has to be, you know, a two-man effort, you know, double teams, triple teams for him to stop. So I am surprised that Frank has not gotten any burn, because I think he would at least contain and limit, you know, some of the explosive plays that Trae Young has put on display in this series so far.
Is Dennis Smith Jr. still on the roster?
No, no. So the crazy thing is Dennis got traded to the Pistons.
When did this happen?
For the D. Rose trade, bro.
Oh, that's who they gave up? Because I didn't see him get any minutes out there.
Yeah, well, he
had a dunk. I saw one dunk on SportsCenter. I'm not going to lie. So one dunk.
Right. So what happened was they make the trade for D. Rose. Dennis Smith is part of the package. And he ended up going down to the G League, I believe, because he knew he needed to work on his game. Like, that's how far he's regressed, I would say, since he got in the league with Dallas. But, yeah, Dennis is no longer there, man. He's no longer there.
I'm always like, you got everybody out here. Give Dennis Smith Jr. some minutes. And that makes sense. He's in Michigan.
Yeah.
Yeah, that explains a lot. And with Atlanta, what's going on with Gallinari's mohawk? Is that a new thing in Italy? What is this?
I don't know.
Who told him that was cool? Who told him that was okay?
I don't know. I guess he wanted to make a statement, you know, reintroduce himself to the Knicks, you know, fan base and make a big splash, right? Because he obviously used to play for New York, but – what he has going on up top is not my cup of tea. It doesn't work well on him. Some people can pull it off, like the Birdman, Chris Anderson.
Of course.
He can pull off all the, you know, crazy hairstyles, gel and all that, spiked hair. But Danilo, oof, that's why he isn't hitting threes. That man had like nine. He must have been shooting.
He lost his confidence.
Well, he made that first three in the game to start things off. And then he doesn't make another three until, I think, late in the third quarter, maybe even the fourth quarter. But he had a whole bunch of misses in between. So, yeah, I think he needs to get rid of the mohawk and just stick to, you know, his regular hairstyle, because clearly it's not working for his game.
My take on the situation, based on nothing, is Trae Young's got, I like to call it the clumps, because I feel like if I went like this, all that shit would come out. Trae Young got Gallinari to get the dumbest haircut on the team just to kind of be like, all right, focus on him.
Hey, that's not a bad opinion or theory.
2K, the graphics, they put the most detail of any player I've ever seen into Trae Young's haircut. They got that shit perfect.
Trae Young, NBA 2K's graphics.
You zoom in, it's like a wasteland up there. It's
a waste. It's like a wetlands, bro.
Yeah.
It's, you know?
Yeah. Do you think New York, the vibe, what percent of New York is rooting for the Knicks over the Nets?
Oh, not like 90%, bro.
Is that surprising to you or not really?
No, it's not surprising, because you have to understand the Knicks have been a part of, you know, the culture, you know, since the beginning. The Nets, they just moved to Brooklyn, you know, I believe it was in, what was it? 2012,
maybe 8 years ago.
Yeah, 2012. So you can't expect, you know, for you to attract and take away fans from the iconic, one of NBA's marquee franchises that has all this history and decorative players in their franchise. So I'm not surprised at all, because it's the Nets. Not only do you have, you know, a lot of new people who are New Jersey or fans, but also the way that Brooklyn came together this year. So they get KD and Kyrie, cool. But then you bring in James Harden and you throw away all these cornerstone pieces, or pieces that, you know, built the culture that allowed you to get James Harden. people are not going to appreciate that. But New York, New Yorkers, they know that the Knicks have been stinking for years, decades really. And for them to see what's going on now, it's like, yo, the wait is paid off.
Your Taj Gibson jersey in the mail yet or no?
Hey, look, man, he had some great putbacks, great dunks over there, in the lane. But nah, no Taj Gibson jerseys coming through.
How old is Taj Gibson? Because I remember towards the end of his time with the Bulls, like when you're kind of seeing the end of D Rose has already been hurt. And you got Nate Robinson popping in there, and Rondo popping in there, and Omer Asik and Ronnie Brewer. Shout out to Ronnie Brewer.
Brewer. Oh my gosh.
Where's Ronnie Brewer?
So old.
Yeah.
He went to Alabama, right?
I have no idea. I just remember he was 6'9" playing two guard.
Yeah.
But I remember at that time Gibson was 32, and that was 8 years ago, bro. Taj Gibson. People are always giving Brady he's old and he's still competing.
Right.
Taj Gibson, right up there with Brady and Phil Mickelson. They need to somehow get into that golf tournament.
Need to get onto that AARP membership. That's what they need to get into.
Yeah.
It's funny you asked that because so he's 35. He's 35
really?
Years old.
He's been born
in 1985.
There's no way.
That dude's been 35. 40.
Yeah, that dude's been 35 since 2014. That Taj Gibson.
Yeah.
He was older than because him and Boozer were the same age, and Boozer been out of the league, 5 years? So
yeah, wow, Boozer. So Taj got drafted in 2009. So I think that was a few years after Boozer, because he was with, Jay Williams and Dunleavy and all them. But yeah, he's old.
35. I gotta double check that. He might have a fake. I don't know.
I had to look it up because I was
35. Dude, Taj Gibson was 29 12 years ago. But oh my god,
29 when he came out of the draft.
Yeah, he's with Dedmon. I'm pretty sure Dedmon came in. Dedmon was 27 because apparently his mother never let him play basketball.
Oh yeah.
And then with Atlanta, do you think they're gonna kind of compete a little bit? How do you see the series going?
I think it goes seven. I really do. I think it's going to be so far it's been an all out war. Every possession has been an extremely excruciating battle, and when you see the Hawks, they live and die by the three. They were hitting all their threes, early. In the game, very good in transition. Trae Young was being a great facilitator. And then that second half, Nate McMillan made a mistake by keeping Trae Young on the bench too long. But also, most of this stuff, they couldn't hit any threes. The threes started falling short. They didn't shoot it with the same amount of confidence as it did in the first half. So they still, were very in it at the end of the game. So I think this is going to go back and forth. And I think the Knicks will win game three. Because I do not see Julius Randle having three straight mediocre to bad games. But before I said, I don't see him having two bad games. And then you see what happened. He obviously upped his play in the second half. But he averaged 37 points in the three games against the Hawks in the regular season.
I didn't know that.
Right? So he went off. And obviously the Hawks, have got a new coach in Nate, who's done a much better job, and they found different schemes to, reduce his productivity. But come on, man, you don't win, most improved player of the year, and you're going to have three straight games where you're just, piss poor. So, I think it's going to go seven. It's very evenly matched.
Yeah, so I want to switch over to the Celtics-Nets series. I was hoping it was going to be a lot more competitive. It's not. Celtics gave a great first quarter in game one, and that's it. What have been your thoughts on the series so far? Are you surprised Brooklyn's been able to put it together so well?
No, I'm not surprised. Boston is, limping around this season. They've been limping around, for pretty much the entire season. And when you lose a guy like Jaylen Brown, who's such an important part of the offense and defense for the Celtics, Jason Tatum cannot carry the load, every night. I mean, it's just he's going to get his points. But that's not going to be enough for them to win. So I'm not surprised. Obviously, they have three of the best, scorers in the game. Kyrie, KD, and Harden. And they're just – Boston's overmatched. They obviously are not going to back down. Although I didn't like Brad Stevens' Brad Stevens's remark before the series, where he's like, you know, as a fan, you know, it's hard to see the Nets losing a game or something. And, you know, we're going to have to play our best. And that type of mentality, like, don't say that. Like, you know, your teammate, your players are not going to be energized or motivated. But they showed out in the first quarter, as you said, in game one. And then, you know, game two, it's just a wash, you know. So, yeah, I'm not surprised at all, because the Nets are the vastly superior team to the Celtics right now.
See, for me as a Celtics fan, it wasn't when Jaylen Brown, they announced he was out for the year, that I lost all hope. It was when I saw a headline that called Evan Fournier Celtics star Evan Fournier. I'm like, oh, we're done. We are done now. We are done now. When they have to resort to that, it's a wash. Tatum's been great, but like, they don't have it. They haven't had bench scoring in years.
Yeah.
And they can't. And Joe Harris going off, game's over.
That's what I'm saying. Right. We didn't even bring that up. Joe Harris. He shoots lights out. Like, he's one of the best shooters in the game, in the NBA. So, yeah, it's a really uphill battle for, you know, Boston. But it's funny you bring up Evan Fournier, because he was trying to get under KD's skin. I don't know if you saw it in game two, where I guess KD thought maybe tried to undercut him a little bit. Ball went out of bounds. He called him the B word. I said, whoa, I don't know if you want to be doing that, but all right.
No, I really wasn't when they went after Fournier. I'm like, all right, he's kind of got on a bloated contract. Don't expect much. He fights. He defends better than I thought he would. I thought it was just like, oh, it's just gonna be just your regular kind of like kind of your European scores and come out to his right own thing, flop a little bit. He's putting his ass out there. I can watch.
Yeah, no, he does not back down from a challenge, and you have to, you know, applaud that. You know, especially given the drastic gap between the Celtics and Nets for this series.
Yeah. And then I want to get into Kyrie's comments after game two, because we're posting this tomorrow.
Right.
Game three. I'm not expecting a win. It would be great. Not expecting a win. What I am expecting is they're going to let him hear it.
Yeah. No, they will let him hear it. And I know that he said, hopefully there won't be any subtle racism or, you know, overt racism in the building. And we obviously know, you know, Boston's history and how they treat Black athletes and Black people in general, although I should say that, you know, they're racist fans within every city, but they have, you know, a much more heightened awareness about racism, or a heightened spotlight on them when it comes to racism. And yeah, they're gonna be really loud and angry. And I hope that nothing crosses the line, as we saw with, you know, the fan who threw the popcorn on Russell Westbrook, and then the Knicks fan who spit at Trae Young. But I don't know, because some of these fans are trying. They haven't been in the gym. They haven't been in the arena for so long. They want to blow off steam. They want to, you know, project their insecurities on other people, on these players who they just see as entertainers. So I'm really anxious to see what happens in game three at Boston, because the Garden is going to be very rowdy.
Yeah. No,
to say, like, the least.
Yeah, it's going to be loud. Like, when they traded Isaiah Thomas, who was a fan favorite, like, Boston loves Isaiah Thomas, gave up him, Crowder, the Brooklyn pick to Cleveland, which then became, what's the dude's name from Alabama? Colin Sexton.
Yep.
Then they found out that Isaiah's hip wasn't as good. Boston had to give up more compensation, get the deal done. He comes there, him, Gordon Hayward. I know it wasn't his fault when he threw the lob. Hayward got hurt. Season kind of was a wash after that. Tatum and Brown kind of took over. Got him to the game seven of the finals, comes back in the entire following season. Will you have me? I'd love to be here. I'd love to see 11 in the rafters. And the stadium was ecstatic. And then it kind of all went downhill. Horford's gone. They're moving everything. Kyrie's gone. He hasn't played there since, which is interesting. I'm pretty sure last season I think he was out the first game, and the second time they're going to play at Boston, I think he was when he elected to take the surgery, even though they were recommended.
That's right.
Oh, all right. You're going to go to Boston. And then when they played him again in the playoffs, he wasn't there this year. I'm not sure if he was, I think he might've been out when they went there, but he's obviously not going to set up a playoff game.
No, he did play. No, he did play.
Well, no fans were there. No fans.
Oh, right. Right. Yeah. Yeah. No, that's right. Right.
No fans.
Yeah.
Yeah. Right. No fans. Yeah, no fans. So it's like, I like him switching the narrative. And then we'll see that it kind of put it on the Celtics fans, but Celtics fans, like, it's going to be loud. Like, it's going to be loud. And honestly, for Boston, I think Boston knows they're going to get swept. If Celtics fans can get this one win against Kyrie and his return, even if they get a gentleman sweep, I think they'll feel confident going into next year.
They'll feel satisfied and fulfilled.
Yeah.
Right. Because, yeah. Well, we got one, you know, against Kyrie. So that's all that matters. And we knew we weren't going to, you know, put up a really hard fight against the Nets anyway. So
yeah,
you got to take your moral victories where you can.
Do you think Kyrie's going to go off, kind of take that villain mentality going home? Or do you think he might struggle? So I remember when they played Cleveland in that first game, I know Hayward got hurt. He struggled a little bit. And that was his big revenge game. You expecting Kyrie to show out tonight to kind of just piss Boston fans off even more? Like, damn, I wish we could have kept him. Or are you expecting him to maybe struggle a little bit on game three?
I don't expect him to struggle, but I don't necessarily think that he will go off like for, you know, 45, whatever, just because of the makeup of the roster, right? You don't have, you're not going to be as ball dominant as you once were when it was just you and KD. You have Harden, who has the ball in his hands more because he's now, you know, the true point guard for this team, as they've talked about. I don't see Kyrie going off like that in game three. I think he'll have 25, 30, but I don't expect some, 50 point game, but he will play well. I do know that. And anybody who says that, he doesn't have an extra chip on his shoulder or, extra motivation for this game, they're lying to you. Cause he's a very introspective and reflective type of individual. And, he doesn't let anything go by the wayside.
Yeah, it's going to be wild. What have been your thoughts on the Wizards? Obviously you brought up Russell Westbrook. I saw, obviously the guy, it was completely intentional.
Right.
The popcorn thing. I saw one great tweet though. Spin Zone. Imagine accidentally spilling your popcorn and all of a sudden you Russell Westbrook clocks you. Like,
Hey, that's what should have happened. Right.
Yeah.
I mean, cause he did
it. That would have been amazing.
Yeah. And I would have given him a raise. You know, you were like, oh, you want to, you know how they get fines?
He's underpaid.
You get a bonus.
He's underpaid.
Right. 42. You get a bonus. You get a bonus for doing that in this game. But, I have a lot of issues with the way Scott Brooks handles his lineups, especially some of his usage with, Daniel Gafford, who's coming on strong late.
Yeah.
It doesn't seem as if he's progressed as a coach since those OKC days. And you're only going to get so much out of, Bradley Beal and Russell Westbrook to where you need more than that. You need, Rui to go off, right? You need, Bertans to, extend some damage, towards the Sixers. And they don't have anybody to stop Embiid. I mean, the guy was in foul trouble. I think it was in game one he was in foul trouble. And they were pulling it close. But when he comes back, they pull away. This guy is 7 foot, hitting, 1 foot fadeaway jumpers, step back, three-pointer. How can you defend that? So I'm not surprised at all. I'm glad they're in the playoffs, but I don't see them advancing. I think they can sneak one game, but they just don't have enough firepower on defense to stop, Embiid, Simmons, and Tobias Harris.
Damn, Tobias Harris loves being included in that big three.
I know. He's often forgotten.
It's unreal. No, because I know Beal's hurt. I know that he said his hamstring's kind of a bum hamstring, but Bertans, ever since he got the contract, has been non-existent this entire season. Pretty sure I saw last night he fouled out 0 for 4, 6 fouls in 23 minutes, didn't hit a shot. Apparently, it hasn't been done in 7 years. So kudos to you. That's unbelievable. So, yeah, I think Vesely did that one time. So
really?
elite Wizards company.
Yeah,
Vesely. I always thought they should have kept him. I think he was just getting there. Not really. He was a good dunker when they were down 20, kind of entertain the fans that were still at then the Verizon Center.
Right.
But I think the thing with the Wizards that always just drives me nuts is they're never bad enough to get a top five pick, but they're never good enough to be considered the best in the conference. And because of that, they're always getting these guys, maybe picks between 9 and 15, and they haven't been that good at choosing guys outside of Wall and Beal. I couldn't tell you any great, great picks they've made since 2000.
I couldn't.
Gilbert was a trade. Jameson was a trade. Like, yeah, I don't know. Like 2 years ago, really? I literally thought they were so bad. They could have gotten Zion, but they're like, no, we want to lose in the first round. I'm like, all right. Not Rui.
They got Rui, and he's solid. You know,
He's fine.
He's not exceptional.
No, they compared him to Kawhi on draft night. I'm like, that's bold. But I think he's Marcus Morris. He's Marcus Morris.
I think he's a little better. Yeah, I could see that. I could see a little Marcus Morris. I think he's better offensively than him. But he definitely brings, you know, an added bonus to the team. He just isn't going to raise the ceiling of the team, you know, that much.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, never knew. The only thing I'll credit Scott Brooks with, never knew Robin Lopez had a hook shot.
Robin Lopez. Oh, my gosh. That guy. Yeah. He and his brother are something else, but
yeah,
hey, you know, Kareem Abdul-Lopez, right? You know, hit that hook shot.
Yeah.
So
if you're making the lineup adjustments for game three, what are you doing for the Wizards?
For the Wizards? I mean, what adjustments can – I mean, maybe you put in, you know, Daniel Gafford.
You start him over Lopez?
Yeah, because you can't – this is not a Make-A-Wish Foundation – where you got to play all these guys at center, because you play the best players and this is crunch time. Your jobs are on the line, and I don't want to hear nothing about Scott Brooks getting extended because I just don't. But yeah, I think Daniel Gafford has shown, especially late in the season, for him to be, you know, a much better option than some of the other centers that they have and Lopez. And I know that, what's his name? Thomas Bryant.
I've never been a big Thomas Bryant guy. He's a good backup.
He's all right, but yeah, I like the young guy in Daniel Gafford, and then there's not much else you can do, man. They're overmatched, so you can switch the lineups, but that ain't gonna help you stopping Embiid or Simmons, you know, direct traffic and Tobias and Seth Curry and Danny Green, you know, hitting from deep. So yeah, what about you? What adjustments would you make?
I wouldn't show up to game three. That's what I wouldn't do. So, it's in D.C., so they better do something. I'm very curious how the crowd, if it's mostly a Philly crowd. I've been to one Wizards playoff game. Ironically, it was the one when Paul Pierce hit the giant shot against the
Oh, crowd. Yeah.
Never been in an atmosphere like that before. It was crazy.
Wow.
Oh, and they lost the series.
Yeah.
They lost the series. So, but I don't know. It'll be interesting. You know Russell Westbrook's going to give it everything. So we'll see how Beal's doing. They got to get something from somebody else. Ish Smith has been great. I don't know why they're not playing him more. They got Raul Neto or Howell. I don't even know how to pronounce this dude.
I forget how it is.
He's fine. He's fine. Hutchinson, I thought Hutchinson was going to be better when he came out of Boise State. And then I wanted to get your take. Obviously, the Jets got Zach Wilson, and they got Elijah Vera Tucker from USC. How do you think they fit into that rotation?
So I think, you know, they have a really promising draft class. You know, in addition to Wilson and Elijah Vera Tucker, they get Elijah Moore, you know, who is one of the better wide receivers coming out of the draft class, the 2021 draft class. So I'm hopeful, because what we knew the Jets needed was a lot of help, because they need to support Wilson as much as possible, not only on the offensive line so he can stand upright and he's not always on his ass, but also on that defense. Because that defense was barbecue chicken in 2020. All right? They did not play well at all, especially on the secondary side, right? Defensive line, you know, with Williams. I'm forgetting his name.
Quinnen Williams?
Quinnen Williams. Yeah, I just forgot his first name. Yeah, Quinnen Williams, stuff like that. But I feel like they have a good nucleus. If they can gel together, you know, in OTAs and minicamp, training camp, I think they can, you know, go. Now it's a 17-game season, so instead of like 8-8, I can see them going of like 8-9. I could see them winning 8 games. They're not a contender in my eyes, but they do have the pieces to lay a good foundation for Wilson to really succeed and thrive. I like Wilson. He He fits all the categories you want in a quarterback these days in this generation. You know, mobile, can launch that sucker like no other, you know, makes good reads, can get the tight windows, can fit the ball into the tight windows. The competition was something that you worried about, but we'll see how it translates. I have high expectations for him, and I'm hopeful that the Jets will have a season where we're not, you know, looking at a one or two game, you know, win season.
Did you think at all, I don't know why, for some reason before the draft, I thought they might take Fields.
So I thought they should have taken Fields. I thought he was a better physical, better prospect overall. I didn't think there was too much separation, but I did feel like Fields was more NFL ready. He's played in big games before, you know, faced adversity and responded, you know, by throwing six TDs in that semifinal matchup against Clemson after, you know, probably broke his ribs. But they fell in love with, you know, Zach Wilson from BYU. They felt like out of nowhere, because all the talk for the season was about Fields and Lawrence, right? Fields and Trevor Lawrence. That's what everybody talked about. And we know Trevor is in his own special category, and then there's everybody else. But yeah, so I was surprised. I wasn't surprised when the pick happened, but I was surprised that all the talk, you know, leading up to the draft after the national championship game, you know, surrounded and ramped up to, yeah, Jets, Zach Wilson. You know, they want Zach Wilson. That's their guy. Yeah. And I'm saying, come on, man. And then, you know, they try to downplay or try to disparage Fields' work ethic and, you know, leadership.
And then the epilepsy thing came out. I'm like, whoa.
Right.
What is this?
Yeah, it's just so weird because it's something that he had dealt with.
Yeah.
He's dealt with all of his life, I think. I don't know if that's entirely true, but I know he's dealt with it for a while. And for that to come out as if, yeah, this is some breaking news, it's a little weird.
Yeah.
It's a little weird to see that play out, because somebody put that information out for a reason. And I don't think it was to help improve his draft stock, you know, before the draft.
No, because when all the field slander kept coming out, first of all, it was shocking. And I'm like, all right, you got San Fran trading two firsts to get to three. They can take whoever they want. You know, Lawrence is going one. The field slander is coming out of nowhere. So I didn't think, it's definitely not San Fran, because they could take Fields if they wanted Fields. Am I thinking, is it teams trying to get Wilson to drop, or teams trying to trying to make Fields seem like an unappealing prospect so that Fields will fall? And I'm thinking, okay, everybody's all on Wilson. There's all this slander to Fields out of nowhere. Are people trying to make the Jets mess this up? And because I was thinking, like, is there any chance they take this? Is there any chance then they take Wilson? I'm like, all right, Fields obviously is going to the Bears. I'm thinking, were teams trying to get Fields to drop? Obviously, probably that's the case. If not, I don't think he's landing in Chicago. I thought Carolina was going to grab him. But
ooh. Yeah, but that wouldn't make sense if, you know, with Sam Darnold.
I know.
Yeah, but before, when they just had Teddy Bridgewater, you could make the argument that maybe they go after Wilson. Yeah, I think it was partly, people trying to, you know, bring his draft stock down so that they could get him. And also, you know, the negative stereotypes that black quarterbacks are often labeled as, or often given when it comes to, work ethic and whether they're, you know, a true leader and all this other nonsense that just has no validity. It's not to say that they don't have, you know, white quarterbacks that get that label sometimes, but more often than not, disproportionately, you see the black QBs, given that type of label.
Yeah. What about the Giants? What do you think their draft class?
The Giants, man. Hey, look, Dave Gettleman did a hell of a job, right? Because I wasn't sure what he was thinking initially with, that trade, because it was after the Eagles had traded with the Cowboys, and the Eagles, you know, get Devontae Smith, and that's who the Giants were going to get. But, you know, they end up getting Kadarius Toney, and they made some really great trades later in the draft. I feel like they have a lot of good pieces, especially on defense, to help bolster, you know, or help make up for what the offense might lack. But I'm more excited about the free agent class. You know, you have Kenny Golladay, you have, you know, Darius Slayton, you have Sterling Shepard,
Calvin Benjamin.
And he's probably a Popeye's biscuit away from being a tight end. But he's now a tight end. Yeah.
He had the biscuit. He's here. He's ready.
Yeah, yeah, a couple biscuits. God bless him. But yeah, so I'm excited to see. You got Saquon coming back healthy from the you know, ACL tear. I think they are the most compelling team on paper in the NFC East. I think they're the most compelling team. And then you have the Cowboys, right? Oh, you know, Washington. They don't have a quarterback. You know, they got
three backups.
You got Ryan Fitz Magic. Are you going to get Fitz Magic? Are you going to get Fitz Tragic? But I think, yeah, they have a great defense. The Washington football team probably has the best defense out of, it would be between the Giants and Washington. But
between the Giants and Washington, you're saying it's a 50-50 shot? You think the Giants defense is going to be that good this year?
Oh, no. I'm talking about just from a defensive standpoint, like who they have and how they've shown.
Yeah,
that's what I'm saying. I'm not saying overall that
just defense. You think Giants have as close to good enough defense as the Washington does?
I mean, dog, did you watch the
game? They're all right. I like Bradbury.
They're all right. James Bradbury is one of the most underrated defensive backs in the game. You saw Leonard Williams. You saw what he did.
I forgot that.
Right? And then you have
They got that inside linebacker who did
inside linebacker. You know, you got Blake Martinez who came over from the Packers. But there was somebody else who I'm blanking on. But they have a solid core, man. Don't sleep on them. Like
from Michigan, right? They got what's his name from Michigan?
Oh, Jabril Peppers.
Peppers.
Yeah, they have Jabril Peppers. But you know, yeah, so I think it's not as the gap is not as big as maybe you think. I think the Giants are right there with them. I would give Washington the edge, you know, Chase Young, you know, on that defensive line and all the talent they have in the backfield or in the secondary. But yeah, what do you think?
I mean, Washington doesn't have a name or a quarterback. They got a new name because I call them the Skins, but most people use the four letters before that because I can't say whiffed. Whiffed doesn't really roll off the tongue for me or watching a football team or football team. Who do you root for? Football team. I'm going to stay away from this guy. It's like good receiving core, tight ends. We'll see how they do. They got big tight end news. They brought in a guy's name was on the Cardinals a couple years ago. Drawing a blank.
I know you're talking.
I was excited. I've drawn a blank. I'll remember it. He was the dude that had the hyphenated last name, that the letters were so big that his number was smaller than all the other.
Oh my gosh. I'm blanking on the name.
He was on the Chiefs last year. Hopefully he makes the team. And they got the good Samus Reyes. The league's not ready for Samus Reyes. He's only been playing football for like 8 months. So we'll see how that does. Defense is going to be loaded. We'll see how. But I think they'll be fun to watch. So that's all you can have for. And then Dallas, you never know. There's consensus, right? Eagles are fourth.
Yeah. Eagles, this is a down year for them. They're not beating anybody. Yeah. I would be shocked if they're, you know, in the race, you know, down the line.
And I wanted to get, before I let you guys, one last question for you. How do you see the NBA playoffs finishing up? Who do you got in the championship and who do you think is going to win it all?
I mean, I don't know. It's tricky because you have the Lakers defending champs who obviously are taking advantage of, you know, Chris Paul being hampered. And I think they'll win against Phoenix but, you know, Luka, Dallas, what they're doing, the Clippers right now, it's really sad to see what's happening to the Clippers. I mean, you got Kawhi and PG both having pretty great games.
And Rondo.
And Rondo, 28. You know,
I don't know if you saw this, but 35 minutes ago, apparently Dallas hasn't been calling plays because Rondo remembers the entire Mavs playbook and is choreographing everything out there.
What?
Yeah. Apparently they're doing everything on the fly. Apparently Rondo's a whiz. Rondo, I had the former Celtics assistant coach on, drawing a blank on his name. I forget his name, had him on a couple months ago, and I said, what do you think Riley's going to do when he's retired? He goes, I'd be shocked if he's not a coach. Apparently, in the playoffs, when he was with Boston, they, before the series, I guess they'd give the guys like a packet of notes and stuff and film and stuff to watch. And he said, like, normally they give it to him, like, maybe a couple nights before the series. They give it to him, and then 4 hours later, he'd say, what else you got? I'm done. And by the way, there's an error on this, 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 and this. Apparently, he's a whiz. He's kind of got, like, one of those Ed Reed kind of takes.
Yeah.
Like that. So that's wild. Yeah.
That's crazy. I did not see that. That's fascinating.
You think the Lakers are going to get past Phoenix? At first, I thought, okay, this is all – Lakers obviously going to do it. But they don't have – I don't think they have the shooting.
Well, if KCP gets out of his head, you know, and, you know, LeBron's able to, you know, pump him up, I think they – and Kuzma, you know, steps up to the table. But, look, they just need – they don't need that much more from their role players. They need – but they need AD and LeBron, you know, to do what they do. And we can't see AD, you know, shrink like he is prone to do for so much of his career. You see, this is a top five talent. Then you see plays like he doesn't want to touch the basketball or he doesn't want to be physical, you know, in the lane. Yeah, that's not going to cut it out. That's not going to cut it for the Lakers, especially after LeBron's gone. But I've been, you know, going on a tangent and I haven't really got to answer your question, so let me get down to it. I think for this year, the NBA Finals will be between the Los Angeles Lakers and the Brooklyn Nets. That's how I see it going down. If there's anybody, though, to challenge the Lakers, I would say that I think the Mavericks could give them a run for their money, and then the Jazz, perhaps. But the Lakers, I don't bet against LeBron James after the things we've seen him do. So yeah, I got Lake Nets.
Who's the biggest threat to Brooklyn?
The biggest threat to Brooklyn, if I would say, probably. Ooh, that's a tough one between them. I'm gonna go with the Bucks. I'm gonna go with the Bucks. You know, Philly's right there with them. You know, that's a toss-up, but I'm going to go with the Bucks, especially, you know, because of the length that they have and the upgrades that they made to their roster after last season, you know, ended in disappointment. Yeah, I think they're going to have problems, you know, down low. Can't stop Giannis, you know. Who's going to, you know, Chris Middleton's one of the top players in the game as well. You know, additions of Jrue Holiday, P.J. Tucker has been really important. So, yeah, I think the Bucks will pose the biggest challenge. What do you think?
I think if Kyrie mid-series decides he's retiring and wants to move to Puerto Rico, that could be a big threat in the Nets playoff case because I would not be shocked to see that happen. You know, like, they're 3-1. You know what? I've done enough basketball. Would you be shocked to see him retire after the season?
No, I wouldn't be shocked. You know, he operates in a much different space than all of us or all of his NBA peers. Yeah. You know, he sees the bigger picture and is concerned about a lot of different social and civil issues involving, you know, the systematic oppression of Black people and, you know, other people as well. So, no, I wouldn't be shocked. You know, he's a different cat. And I love him for it because he does not fit the stereotypical mold, you know, of an athlete. And he's able to, you know, be very thoughtful in his words. And sometimes, you know, people don't like that, but I like it. I like his honesty.
Kyrie's the kind of guy that I feel like if you went, you're like hanging out in Yoda's place and you say, can I have a beer? He says, like, I got you. And he walks up to you. He'll bring you some shit you would never heard of. Like, what is this? And he goes, try it. And he goes, it's got like roots in it. It's got like, it's good. It's a little like an acai. But like, bro, you got a Bud Light? He goes, nah, I got this shit. I feel like he's a weird beer guy. That's a bold take from my
opinion. I think he's a weird individual, period. But yeah. I say weird as a compliment because I'm weird. I'm not in his realm of weird, but yeah, he is not normal by any stretch of the imagination. So weird.
Is he the Rodman of this era?
The Rodman? Oh no, baby. No.
You don't think so?
No. If anybody were the Rodman, Well, in what way?
And just like he's on a different wavelength than almost everybody else in the rest of the league. He's just a different dude that like most people don't understand, and he's gonna do shit his way.
Yeah, there's some similarities. Robin's a completely
different cat. I don't see Kyrie hanging out with Kim Jong-un anytime soon, but like that. No, yeah.
But as far as people who don't understand him and him needing to take time off, out of the blue, just like Robin did. Yeah, there's some similarities there. But I think, both of them are unique in their own right. However, there are some commonalities that they share and how people react to them in a polarizing way. And there's a lot of animosity towards them because of how they carry themselves.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
Yeah.
It's interesting. It's interesting. Well, always a pleasure having you on. I do appreciate you taking the time. How can people follow you on Twitter and keep up with you?
They can follow me at CWilliamson44 on Twitter, and then on Instagram, CWilliamsonTV9. But man, you got it. So I gave my prediction. So you got to give yours. Who's going to be in the NBA Finals?
I have no idea. I honestly, I had the same prediction as you. I literally thought, all right, Brooklyn's going to coast. The Lakers are going to coast. I didn't think the Suns stood a chance. I think Utah's a great regular season team. I think they're frauds. I played with them on 2K the other day.
Oh, okay.
Nobody besides Donovan Mitchell could score. And I think that's going to happen. So I don't know if that's just a precursor. Denver, I think Jamal Murray, I think that was the nail in the coffin for them. Dallas, Porzingis. Yep. I don't know what's going on with this dude. This dude was game changer, unicorn of the Knicks, has the ACL tear. I think might have had some structural damage. Gets to Dallas. This dude does not look the same. People were talking about this dude as a game-changing talent when he came out with Towns and Okafor. Okafor kind of stunk it up. Towns was good, kind of falling off a little bit. But Porzingis, they're like, this guy's a sure thing. And he just kind of like, he just looks average out there. And I don't know if they have enough. So
that's a good point. I don't know.
Yeah, and the East side, I don't think there's – I think you got Brooklyn kind of on top of everybody. I'm still not sold in the Bucks. I want to see him get to an Eastern Conference Finals, let alone a Finals. Middleton, I think Middleton's one of the most overrated players in the game, and he has his moments. But he's had some moments, but like
that game winner, him. Right?
He had one against Boston. He
had one against the Heat this series.
I know he can get that big shot, but like when they're way down and they need him to take over, I have not seen that, and that's been I think their biggest hurdle. If they can do it, I think it'd be great for the city of Milwaukee. They've won a title since 1970, but if he's your number, I don't see you winning a title with him as your number two.
So, even with the addition of Drew,
I just don't. And then with the Philly, we'll see how it goes. I mean, you never know. Doc Rivers has coached them up; he's been unbelievable. Embiid used to be a first quarter guy, and then he'd show up a little bit in the fourth until he fouled out. Now he's doing that. Simmons still won't shoot. Tobias Harris getting $40 million a year. We need to see more contributions because they can't bring in more talent because they're giving him most of the cap. We'll see how that whole plays out. I think it's going to be interesting. I think we're going to see a team like last year when the Heat got in, like a team nobody saw coming. I think one of those teams is going to make the finals this year.
I think it's very possible. Now you're making me reconsider my prediction because we know that the Lakers are not at full strength. AD and LeBron are not completely healthy. But, yeah, you make some great points. I would be excited to see that, an upset, on either the Western Conference or East.
Yeah, no, because I was rooting for the Warriors to get in, because I thought that would have been electric to see them get in. Yeah. They don't really have the depth to compete. My bold prediction, I'm glad I didn't bet Andrew Wiggins' first-time All-Star, did not pan out.
Oh, wow.
But, he strapped up LeBron in the play-in game, which is almost as good as making the All-Star team. I don't know they'll put that on his bio. Strapped up LeBron for 7 possessions, forced 3 misses. But I'm excited for very excited for next year. Because you get Thompson back, you kind of get some. You don't know what's going to happen with Kawhi. Kawhi could move back east. If he goes to the Knicks, that'd be wild to have those two powerhouses in New York.
Oh my gosh.
So I think it's going to be interesting. And we got a loaded draft class. Last year's class really didn't excite me too much because none of the guys really made that much of an impact that they propelled their teams to the playoffs this year. So you can't really, not really excited about that. Plus, Zion's not even in. Hopefully they can get there. But plus, I feel like we need a full season of fans. Because, like, when you – I still have that bubble vibe. it's just goes to just empty arenas for so long. I still got the bubble mindset that like we're not back to 100% yet. Hopefully next season we'll get there.
Yeah, I think you're exactly right, because it's just weird not having fans for most the entire year,
yeah,
save, you know, like a couple of months. And then now it's, you know, I guess, I don't know, 50% or 75% yeah. capacity,
yeah.
whatever it is. You go from 2,000 fans to 15,000.
Yeah,
I definitely understand where you're coming from. So I'm excited too for next year when fans will fully be able to enjoy an entire season.
Yeah, and I think maybe it's different if you go to a game and you kind of shake that mindset off, like, all right, I'm back, I'm good. But for people that have been watching at home, nothing's really changed, just a little bit louder. So I don't know if that's it. So I don't. It's probably different for the players. I have no idea. But yeah. So glad we have sports now, because this time last year was brutal.
Nothing.
Not
going on.
It was just everything was depressing. You couldn't do anything. You had the lines at the grocery store. We made some progress. Watch out for the cicadas. Those, I'm telling you, they're coming, and you're gonna be loud as shit. And they're gonna be. It's wild. I'm glad they're only here every 17 years. Can't wait till they're gone. But do appreciate you taking the time to chat. Always, really, always a pleasure.
Appreciate it, man. Stay well. All right,
appreciate
take
it,
care.
Appreciate it. You too.